to smoke about this time of the day. And all this is keeping me to where I can't go do it. Now, I'm gonna go do it.
Well, hello, and welcome to another session of About This Time of Day, a Teen Mom podcast, where we are living in 2009 and would like to stay there. My name is V, I am your host, and this is a show where we just get a little high and talk a little Teen Mom. And in today's session, we're going to talk about episode 5 of Teen Mom OG, A Little Help. Today's session companion is a little white widow in a cartridge. And I'm not going to lie, you guys, I had to cross state lines for this one. It's a full gram, and it is like 78% THC, so I'm working a little heavier than I ever have here in my state. So I like it so far. I like White Widow. I had it when I went to Denver once. It's a strain I always wanted to smoke, and I finally had a chance to smoke it, and I'm happy that I found a cartridge of it near me. So with that said, let's get started with About This Time of Day. The fifth episode of Teen Mom OG starts with Caitlin and Tyler. We get a little reminder that Caitlin has moved in with Tyler and is living with him temporarily because the relationship between Caitlin and Butch and her mother not really improving whatsoever. In this first scene, we have Caitlin questioning her own emotions, and she's not sure if she should be feeling the way she's feeling. She talks about feeling depressed and missing Carly. Tyler reassures her, "No, Caitlin, that's totally normal. In fact, if it was anything else, that would be unusual, but totally normal to feel the way you're feeling." And he completely supports her in this moment. And thank you, Tyler. That's exactly what I wanted from you. But I understand how she's feeling. I understand, you know, am I really allowed to be feeling this way? Is it really okay for me to be angry right now? Is it okay for me to be sad right now? Is it okay for me to feel nothing right now? I question my own feelings so often, and often enough to know that I can reassure Caitlin here, girl, you are entitled to feel however the fuck you want to feel about anything. It's what happens thereafter due to those feelings that matter most. I'm happy to see Tyler so supportive, and I'm happy to see Caitlin kind of coming to terms with her thoughts and feelings about the adoption. In Caitlin's next scene, Tyler asks Caitlin, "How are you feeling today?" Caitlin answers, "Still kind of depressed, still really missing Carly." Caitlin tells Tyler that she needs more support. Tyler immediately says, "Well, why don't you call Dawn?" "Well, I personally hate Dawn, but I guess Dawn is your best option." They head on into the living room, and Caitlin gives Dawn a call.
"Hey, Caitlin, what's going on?"
"We were just wondering if there's any, like, support group that I can go to."
"And how would you achieve that?"
"Yeah, you know, there is a retreat that's coming up for a group that have made an adoption plan. They kind of gather together at a beach house."
"Uh-huh."
"And they talk about their feelings and what their journey has been like. We can try to work out the details for that if that sounds like something you'd like to do."
"Actually, that sounds really sweet. All right, thank you so much, and I'll talk to you soon."
"Bye-bye."
"Bye." "That sounds sweet."
That is totally sweet. Caitlin is about to get some extra support, and Dawn proved herself to be a little bit more than worthless. In Caitlin's very next scene, she is off and on her way to the birth mom retreat. And like I said, I'm really excited for her. I think this is going to be great. She gets into her car that's there to pick her up. The label of the person's name says Jen, the group founder. So that's pretty impressive to have the group founder of the entire retreat organization come and pick you up and give you a personal escort to the birth mom retreat. Hey, you know what, Caitlin? If you can go in style like that, kudos to you. It's good networking, girl. We see Caitlin meeting all the other moms when she arrives at the house, and they quickly enter into one room, sit down, and start their first meeting of the night. We see Caitlin tell her story. She talks about Brandon and Teresa, how great they are, and what she hopes for the future. Again, something we know. She wants to be closer with Brandon and Teresa. She wants to have access to their personal information. She wants to send them birthday presents every year. You know, these kinds of things that every birth mom would want. Caitlin's voiceover ends out by saying that the first night was a lot more intense than she imagined. The next time we catch up with Caitlin, she is doing an activity with the other girls that are on the retreat with her, and they are talking about healing from regret and different ways to forgive yourself for the things that you regret in the past. What follows is a lot of great discussion among the girls. They're talking about things like allowing yourself to feel that sorrow, to grieve that loss, something that is, I will definitely say, is very, very important. In Caitlin's case, there's some kind of social pressure around, well, you know, you made this choice, so obviously you're okay with it. I feel like she might get that a lot from April and Butch. Well, you gave your goddamn kid away, that kind of thing. When that's not the case at all. It is traumatic and a huge deal and a huge loss in your life, no matter if it is planned or what. That's something that Caitlin really needs to allow herself to do, allow herself that grieving time. The next part of the conversation they go on to is what things in your life make it difficult for you to forgive yourself and to heal from that pain. Caitlin speaks up and says, when your parents don't agree with your decision, absolutely. And another girl speaks up and says, the fact that you got pregnant. The girl says, it's very shameful to be pregnant and unmarried, pregnant and underage. You know, society definitely frowns upon teenage pregnancy. I remember when this show first came out, 16 and pregnant and teen mom, some people were losing their minds. Like, how can you give a TV show to these kids? So I understand why she might feel that shame. But I don't think that it's fair to say, you know, it's shameful to get pregnant. It's not shameful in itself. We as a society make it shameful, and I'm not advocating for teen pregnancy, don't get me wrong. But people make mistakes. People make poor choices. And I really believe it's what they do with those choices that define their character. Like Ryan? Ryan should be shamed because he's not doing jack shit. Whereas Macy, you know, did she make a bad decision? Yeah, but is she taking responsibility for that in the best way she knows how? Absolutely. So how can we shame her? How can we shame any of these girls? The group leader does say that shame is toxic and shame breeds shame. I just don't think it's enough. I think there should have been more. Like, no one here is judging you. And no one out there can judge you because no one is living your life. And you all chose a better life for those kids. So how can you be ashamed? That's just my takeaway from it. The group leader tells them all to write down something on a piece of paper that they all feel brings them the most shame in regards to their choice of adoption. Caitlin writes down that I think I could have done it. They all go out into the porch area and place their shame slips into the fire to burn away as a symbolic representation of letting go of that shame. As Caitlin puts hers in the fire, she says that she's not going to think about it anymore and turns around and gives the group leader a big hug. The group leader says to her, "Wish it were that easy." And she's not wrong, but that's not the most comforting thing to say. Isn't that the whole point of the exercise? The scene ends with Caitlin's voiceover saying that she knows it's not going to be easy, but it's a start. Still on the retreat, Caitlin's next scene starts with her voiceover saying that she's really learned a lot on this retreat and had a great time, but not knowing a lot about Brandon and Teresa and Carly is still bothering her. Because of this, Caitlin decides to ask the group leader and the group founder to chat and talk about these feelings she's been having. I feel like Caitlin's asking a lot of difficult questions that have no easy answers. And I feel like in order to kind of stay on the safe side of things with Caitlin, and maybe for people pleasing on television, they give her very safe and very vague answers.
I'm learning a lot on this retreat.
I just wonder if I could talk to you.
But not knowing more about Carly still upsets me.
Like, I wanted to know her name and where she lived. But Brandon and Teresa said that it was like a trust thing. And I didn't understand where they were coming from. I was like, how am I supposed to give you guys trust? Because like, me and Brandon and Teresa are really close. And I'm just like, what's the problem? What's the deal? I don't understand.
So I may be misunderstanding what Caitlin means by, how am I supposed to give them trust? Does she actually mean how is she, Caitlin, supposed to give Brandon and Teresa her trust? Or is she trying to say how is she supposed to get Brandon and Teresa to trust her, Caitlin? I'm not sure. If it's the latter, then no big deal. If it's the former, there's something wrong with that statement. They are the ones that need to be trusting you with this information.
Probably feels risky to keep bringing it up.
Because you feel like they have the power to really end it all if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm. I've always said, like, you know, you don't have to worry about anything. I'm not going to, like, I'm never going to take her away from you guys.
Yeah, there's some fears there somewhere.
Yeah.
It's a relationship that doesn't fit exactly into any other mold.
Yeah.
Well, they probably don't have many models either.
Mm-mm.
This isn't comfortable for either of you.
No.
I think they're just afraid.
It is a process for them to get to know you as you, rather than you as this person carrying their child.
Yeah.
And that does take some time.
Yeah.
You've done a lot of things for them to be really proud of.
Mm-hmm. But this made it a lot better. Like, you guys make me feel so important, because I never felt that before. I never had that.
Thank you. I never realized that this might be just as hard for Brandon and Teresa as it is for me and Tyler.
I feel like the way these two leaders approach her is, again, very general. I think they're scared. Well, yeah, obviously they're scared. I mean, does Caitlin not know? I mean, maybe she says at the end here that she never realized it was as hard for Brandon and Teresa as it's been for Caitlin and Tyler. But I feel like you have to know that everyone's a little scared. Even if you're not going to take the baby away from them, Caitlin, you can just start showing up at their doorstep. And I think that's exactly what they want to avoid. You need to allow them that time, and that will allow them to gain trust in you. In Caitlin's next scene, it's the last night of the retreat for the birth moms. And she and the other birth moms are gathering on the beach for a big bonfire to talk about everything they've learned and everything they've gained from the retreat. It's a really nice scene, a very picturesque moment of these women gathering as one in sisterhood. And I know that sounds kind of cliche and maybe a little dumb. I totally admit that. But that's truly what you're seeing here. These women coming together, supporting each other in the ability to give birth and their decisions thereafter for their child. I think this is very important for women to do. Absolutely, women supporting women, and actually women supporting women, not just the women that you like. That doesn't count. Caitlin addresses the entire group and says that she wants to thank every one of them because she feels like she's found a new family. She's never known this kind of support before. And discovering this group of women has been extremely helpful for her in her path towards healing. The group laughs and completely embraces her in that moment. They tell her that she's stuck with them for life and she's one of them now. And it's really good to see Caitlin have this safe place where she knows that she can always go to in her heart, in her mind, and at least once a year to find that support. And hopefully she's getting phone numbers from these girls. She needs that support in place as much as possible. In Caitlin's final scene, she is shown heading home from the birth mom retreat and back to Tyler's house. She walks through the door, lugging her big suitcase behind her. Tyler gets up right away and says, "Hi, honey, I missed you," gives her a big hug. It's really sweet. The scene transitions into Tyler's bedroom, where Caitlin is showing Tyler the notebook that she kept during her time at the birth mom retreat. It's everything she's learned and everything she needs to remember going forward to help her heal.
We learned that second-guessing your decision can make you crazy. Don't get stuck in it.
Yeah, that's good.
Stop with the what ifs. And you know how I'm always telling myself, like, what if I could have done this? What could I have done this? And then understand it was the best decision at the time.
Well, sounds like it really helped you, huh?
Yeah, it did. I got the most amazing feeling when I was there. And I felt accepted. And nobody was judgmental, and everybody liked you for who you were. And it felt like every single woman was, like, sitting in that bed with me. Like, the day that I had Carly, every single woman in that room was, like, sitting next to me in that bed. It touched me so much to have all these women around me tell me how important I am and that we actually mean something.
Yeah.
And I think it's just amazing how important we are to Carly, because I never thought that we really were going to be.
Why didn't you think that?
I never did, but I learned that I am. And that's what touched me so hard, like, this whole thing, is that I learned that I was important.
Wow, that's so powerful. I'm really, really glad that it seems like Caitlin learned so many important lessons. And I want to say that I feel like Caitlin probably had some self-esteem issues way before getting pregnant with Carly, because she grew up with an alcoholic mother who is verbally abusive and possibly physically abusive as well. We don't know. That's bound to give you low self-esteem. Your own mother treats you like shit. Why should anybody else treat you any better? And sorry, but I'm gonna come down on Dawn again. Why didn't Dawn give her extra support in this area and really reinforce that what she's doing here by placing Carly with Brandon and Teresa is monumental and deserves so much reverence and to be considered so courageous? She needs to know that she is important. Why hasn't this been, like, plastered all over Caitlin's face, you know, from the beginning of the adoption process? I'm so sorry that you didn't think you were important in this process, and I'm so sorry that you have an adoption counselor that isn't taking your past into account and not giving you that kind of support that you clearly needed from the get-go. Tyler gives Caitlin a hug and tells her that it makes him feel really important too. The two of them cuddle on the bed, and Caitlin, even though she's a little weepy, is smiling, and you can tell she's happy and comfortable and way more at ease than she was before she went on the retreat. So happy to see it. The scene fades out and it goes into the montage. Next, we meet up with lovely Macy, little potato bug Bentley, and Ryan. If you couldn't tell by my tone of voice, Ryan is back to his old ways. Macy's voiceover says they're trying to work things out, and that day of the filming or whatever, they're going to get family photos taken, which for any other family would be like this fun, happy occasion with everybody being enthusiastic and grateful to even be alive. But of course, Ryan is acting like he can't even fucking be bothered. I really don't know what it is about him and needing to give a shit, because it seems like when it actually matters, he just falls apart. We see Macy, Ryan, and baby Bentley pull up to the photography studio, and Macy's voiceover wishes that he would at least pretend to be a little excited.
Okay, you get Bentley, I'll get his bag.
How we doing, man?
Pretty good.
Well, let's start it up. Hey, dad, smile. We're not in prison here, okay?
We're not in prison here. Holy shit. I know he's saying that to probably make Ryan smile and to lighten the mood and make him laugh, but that should give you a basic idea if you're only listening along and have never seen the TV show for some reason. How did you find this podcast? That is what his face looked like. He looked like he was in prison. He had a blank stare, no smile, deadness in his eyes, the normal Ryan deadness that you know and love, and would not cooperate with the picture. Macy's sitting there next to him smiling. They're telling Bentley to smile, as you could hear him make funny noises to try to make Bentley laugh. And I just hate Ryan in this scene. I hate watching him because he's just going out of his way not to put forth any effort.
All right, Daddy, your turn with Mr. Bentley.
Bentley, smile, Ryan. Show teeth, smile, please.
Fantastic.
Macy's voiceover closes out on her first scene by saying, if Ryan can't even look happy in pictures, we're really in trouble. And I think in Macy's situation, there may be some credence to that. If you look at it, I mean, taking pictures can be draining, but it's supposed to be a fun time. You're building memories, and you can't even put a smile on. Macy really has to beg you to put a smile on and to show teeth. She was talking to Ryan. Bentley didn't have to be told twice. He was smiling this whole fucking time. Next time we see Macy, she's cuddling in bed with Ryan. Okay, I'm getting really sick of seeing them be a couple. Can we just get past this phase already, please? We get to see firsthand what it's like waking up next to Ryan.
So what are you doing today?
I'm going shopping.
You gotta take Bentley to shop.
You're not going.
Quit being stupid.
You're being stupid.
Can you give me a hug or something?
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Why do you insist on wearing me out?
Bye.
So obviously Ryan is just a peach, but I wanted to talk a little bit about their use of stupid, because I know I did come down on Ryan, I think during Macy 16 and pregnant, for calling Macy stupid in the middle of a normal conversation. I'm hearing Macy do it now. I still don't like anybody just calling the other person stupid. I don't agree with that. I love Macy, but I can't give her a pass on this one. I'm sorry. But I will say, maybe giving them both a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. Maybe when they call each other stupid, it's more like you're dumb or you're being silly, and they don't know how aggressive it can come off. Maybe to them it's not. So maybe I was looking too deeply into that one. The scene continues into Macy and her mom getting ready in front of the mirror together for their day, just putting on makeup. It's kind of cute to see them doing that together. I've never really been a girly girl, so my makeup takes literally 5 minutes in the morning, but seeing them just kind of primp and preem for the day is very mother-daughter. So we have this conversation going on where Macy's mother is asking Macy, so do you think it's going to work this time? And Macy can't answer her. She doesn't know, still. Macy expresses to her mom that she feels like she has to make a decision about Ryan really soon. Her mom reminds her that she's still 18 and she does have some time. Macy, in turn, makes a very excellent point that she wants to figure this out before Bentley understands what's happening. Very good point, and a very responsible point. At this time, you're pretty safe to say you can kind of mold his memories, but it will get to a point where it will start to get messy for him. Probably like the toddler years and on is when those formative memories occur for little kids. Macy's mom expresses to her as well, you know, I know you and Ryan don't exactly communicate either. And Macy knows that they don't, but she still rolls her eyes when Macy's mother suggests maybe seeing a counselor who will help you communicate a little bit better with each other. Macy doesn't respond to her mother in that moment, but her voiceover does say, well, Ryan's not going to help her fix this family. So she has to, for Bentley. Next time we see Macy, we find out that she's got a new job as bartender. Well, good, because one of you has got to be earning money, and if Ryan isn't job hunting or apparently anything else, Macy's got to pick up the slack. So we see her getting ready for her first shift at work, and we see Ryan still being Ryan. Macy's voiceover says she thought that working on their relationship meant that Ryan would help out with Bentley more, but we have him being kind of put to the test here and not exactly passing with flying colors. Ryan asks Macy when she's going to be home that night, and she answers him as if she's already told him 3 or 4 times that she'll be home around midnight or 1 a.m. She then asks Ryan, are you going to be here all night? Or do you have plans with Bentley? Ryan actually says, shit, I don't know. That's not a very good answer to give when you should be watching your son. As Macy's walking out the door, she rightfully nags Ryan a bit because Bentley's chilling out underneath the coffee table that has a lot of hard edges for soft heads to get hit on. She tells Ryan, hey, don't forget, you really need to watch him because the second you're not looking, he books it to the stairs. Ryan pretty much just blows her off. She comes back with, no, for real, you need to watch him because he's a small child. Ryan says, no shit, Macy. There's a quick silence, and then Macy says, okay, bye, turns around and walks out. And she doesn't even say it as rudely as I just said it now. It's very much more benign than that. Macy's voiceover closes out that scene by saying, I wish I didn't have to beg Ryan to spend quality time with little potato bug Bentley. In Macy's next scene, we see her at work. She's doing her basic duties, looking very busy, wiping down tables, serving drinks, serving food. It looks like the customers that are there at the bar with her are some of her friends from maybe high school or around the neighborhood. One of them asks, where's little man tonight? Meaning little potato bug Bentley. I guess he didn't know that's his nickname, Potato Bug. Whatever. Macy tells him that he's with Ryan, and the guy almost looks a little scared, like, really, with Ryan? Wow. Which is not a good feeling to have. I'm sure that maybe put a little guilt inside her just as a mother out working. Of course, at no fault of her own, she needs to be doing what she has to do since Ryan is not doing jack shit. The scene continues, she's closing up shop, and it's about 1 a.m. when she and her coworker are leaving the bar. Okay, so anybody who's worked late nights know that even if you don't get home until 1:30 or maybe even 2, you're still kind of up from work. You need maybe a little bit of time to wind down, so who knows what time you're actually getting to sleep if you're getting off of work at 1 a.m., okay? The next part of this scene transitions to 7 a.m., so 6 hours later from when Macy gets off of work. Who knows how long she's actually slept at this point? And Bentley is crying. Who should get up right now? Who should get up and help with little Potato Bug Bentley? Exactly who you think doesn't get up. Ryan actually has the audacity to lay in bed with Macy and tell her to get up at 7 a.m. when who knows when she actually crawled back into bed with this fucking asshole loser. Macy says to Ryan, do you know what you would be doing right now if I told you to get up and you had worked all night? Ryan just responds, yeah, okay. The viewer gets a quick glimpse of Bentley screaming in his crib, screaming. It pans back to Macy and Ryan in the bedroom. Ryan has gotten up, but he's over getting his keys. Ryan's leaving. Macy asks, where are you going? And he says, I don't know. So he has taken all the effort to get up, get at least presentable enough to put on a hat and grab his keys and walk out the door while completely ignoring Bentley this entire time. If he put that much effort into taking care of his son, he would be a semi-good dad. Just half as much of that effort. Unbelievable. Macy says, I wish you would just think about somebody other than yourself. And Ryan, classic deflecting, I wish you would, instead of sleeping all day. This mother... Macy, of course, ends up having to get up and take care of Bentley after Ryan just drives off. Macy's voiceover ends that scene by saying, I guess my mom was right. We need some help with our relationship. The next time we see Macy, she and Ryan are over his parents' house, and Macy is about to make an appointment with a relationship counselor. Ryan is lying down on the couch. Macy sits on the couch, gets under the blanket with him, and starts dialing the phone number. Ryan is seriously, like, almost asleep. Macy starts calling and says, I'd really like an appointment today, if possible. And Ryan goes, today, I don't feel good today. The camera pans out and you see Ryan's dad kind of standing over him in the living room saying, well, whatever we're gonna do something other than laying on this couch all day today. Mm-hmm. Good on you, Larry, because he knows damn well that Ryan is a minute away from losing Macy, and Macy's, at this rate, probably the best he's ever going to do. No offense, Mackenzie. Or yes offense, Mackenzie. Somehow, Macy's able to get a same-day appointment with a relationship counselor who is also a doctor. I honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, can't remember if I was in therapy in 2009-2010. I should have been, I'll say that. But I don't remember if it was that easy to get an appointment like that. Today, I feel like with insurance and healthcare and specifically getting appointments with therapists that are doctors, it's difficult to get in same day. Ryan is, of course, less than enthusiastic about going that day, but Ryan's parents assure him that this is the first step to something really great for him and Macy. The scene continues, and Ryan and Macy are headed on their way to their therapy appointment. And even in the car, Macy shows appreciation to Ryan. Thank you for going with me today.
Thank you for being here today.
Now that means a lot in a relationship, and big kudos to Macy for realizing that this is probably hard for Ryan to do. He's not a talk-about-your-feelings kind of guy, but he is, maybe against his better judgment, going to this counseling appointment with Macy, and that we've seen not putting up a big fight about it, at least certainly not as big of a fight as it is to get him to get out of bed to take care of Bentley. Ryan and Macy walk into the counseling office and meet up with their doctor, therapist, whatever, and lucky for us, they allow cameras in the room with them.
Let's start with the beginning. How long have you been together?
2 years.
And you have a baby. Mm-hmm. Is that right? So at some point, things got difficult for the two of you. What did you want more of with him?
Help.
You wanted more help.
Mm-hmm.
How does he know? How do you let him know?
In a very bad way.
Okay, so what were you doing specifically?
Instead of, asking him or telling him what he could do, I was just expected him to know, and then when he didn't do anything, I would freak out.
And when she's yelling?
I wouldn't even try.
I wouldn't even try.
I didn't care to try.
Yeah, so you're finding out that not talking didn't work.
Right.
So it's interesting to see here how Macy views herself. She lets Ryan know, in her opinion, in a very bad way. She expects him to know what to do, and when he doesn't do it, she reacts, and that turns Ryan off completely. And that's totally understandable. When things like that happen in a relationship, that's typically how that dynamic ends up working out. However, I understand that people get good edits. Don't get me wrong. You know, one of my biggest hang-ups on this show is don't forget editing. My question, I guess, is she just expecting the basic things and reacting when Ryan doesn't provide that? Now, regardless, reacting in a way that is yelling or potentially abusive on one end or another is not the way to address a problem, no matter if you're Macy or if you're not. But what I'm saying here is, does that mean you can't even expect the bare minimum from Ryan? Or is Macy just given an edit so that we as the viewers don't see that side of her? The session continues.
What's the deal breaker that's taking you guys away from each other?
Probably Bentley.
Yeah.
It has something to do with if you care about me, you'll help with the baby. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
You look like that makes you tearful.
Yeah, because I can feel when we lost each other.
It sounds like it's not okay with her to lose you.
I mean, I hope it's not.
Okay, was that just me or was that like a really shitty response? Well, I hope it's not okay with her to lose me. Maybe it's just a guy thing, but I feel like you should be saying something like, well, I don't want to lose her either, or just nodding your head, but actually saying, oh, I hope it's not okay to lose me. Maybe I'm nitpicking, but that just rubs me the wrong way. I don't know.
Has anything ever worked in the past for you to comfort her?
He doesn't think that I need him to comfort me.
But the truth is what?
I do.
Yeah. But you know what? Here's the neat thing about men. We need to be real clear with them. Mm-hmm. They're not going to just know because they love us. More hugs, please. They help. What does it do to you when you get the hugs from him?
It makes me, want to drop everything to be where he is.
Yeah. You're very powerful with this girl. Did you know that? I'm glad you told him.
Yeah, that was hard.
I really like being able to hear Macy open up and be emotional. As I've said a few times in this podcast, she puts up a pretty tough front. Her crying here is very moving to me because it's so rare. And so when it happens, you know that something is really happening with Macy emotionally, and to pay attention to it as people who take an interest in her, I guess. I don't know. Is that creepy? Anyway, we hear also that Ryan is now acknowledging his importance in Macy's life. That reinforcement. You're needed here, Ryan. So that's good. Maybe Ryan didn't know that Macy needs him as much as she does. And this is a 2009 doctor talking, so maybe a 2021 doctor might say it in a different way. But you do have to be very clear with your partner in what you need, no matter what that is and no matter who that is. I personally know that it is very helpful just to be straightforward, so I'm happy to hopefully see this doctor helping them realize that, and Macy taking the first steps in expressing those needs to Ryan. I'm so happy with the way this therapy session went, or at least what we saw of it. We ended with a clear goal in mind, and we also got to hear Ryan himself say, "Yes, I want to be with Macy," making that the second time he's ever said that on camera. They head out of the office, say their goodbyes, and as soon as they're on the patio area, they give each other a big hug and embrace for a long time. It's really great to see Ryan smiling, and you can tell that hour-long therapy session really helped. In fact, the two of them get in the car, and Macy's voiceover says, "Well, if I need to start expressing what I need to Ryan, might as well start now." And she asks Ryan in the car for a kiss. I'm not gonna lie, I totally thought Ryan would have some smartass comment, some bullshit like, "Oh, well, only if you come to me," kind of excuse, but nah, he leans over, gives her a nice kiss, and I'm so happy to see Macy getting what she needs. Macy's voiceover ends the scene by saying, "Maybe asking for help is the solution." Next, we catch up with Amber. Amber has a very short opening scene, so Amber haters out there, this is your lucky day. But don't worry, Christina Fact fans, we will fit one in. Amber's scene starts with her and baby Leah in the motel room where we left them. Amber's voiceover reminds everyone that I left Gary because I couldn't take it anymore, and now I live in this motel with my daughter. To my shock and surprise, because Amber has moved out and apparently is now taking care of Leah 100% of the time, because of baby Leah and her responsibility to baby Leah, it's impossible for Amber to take her GED classes. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I said. It's impossible for her now to take her GED classes, which is 90% of the reason she had to move out anyway, because he wasn't being supportive of her GED, and now she has to take care of the daughter, which is what she said she would do anyway, but now she can't do it, and I'm just really confused, and I feel like she's just making up excuses. I could go on, but literally the scene was only like 20 seconds long, and I don't want to spend 3 minutes talking about a 20-second clip when I'm sure there will be plenty more frustrating moments to come, even if we do have a shorter Amber episode today. Amber's next scene starts with her voiceover telling us that even though she and Gary are arguing, it's still important that Gary sees Leah, so he's coming over to visit. He comes into the room, he catches up with Leah, plays with her for a bit, and all of a sudden starts to pick a fight with Amber. Now, as with everything, we have to consider what might not have been shown, but what we see is Gary and Leah hanging out, and then we see Gary ask how much this place is a week. Then he asks, "Was it a little easier with me?" Are you kind of saying to yourself, "Oh, I had it a lot better over there with Gary"? Amber responds that she had it better financially, perhaps, but not emotionally. Gary right away comes back with, "You're not stressed right now? You're not having a hard time on your own right now with Leah?" After a little bit more back and forth, Gary ultimately tells Amber, "You can come home.
If you get tired of staying here, you can come back home."
"It's not a relationship. I'm not happy."
"Okay, but you know what? We're family."
"You know that if we got back together, Gary, you'd be the same way."
"So what happens when you run out of your money?"
"Keep talking about the money."
"Isn't that a big factor? Money is everything."
"No, I don't want you to help me."
"Amber, quit.
Just leave.
I want things to work out with us."
"But you don't change anything, so I don't want to hear it no more."
"Amber,
I'm done with this. I'm done with the crying over everything."
"Amber, I still care about you. I still love you, Amber."
"Just leave me alone right now. At least let me think, okay?"
So this analysis may be a little out of left field and completely inaccurate, but I will say that I think that Gary did Amber pretty dirty here. I mean, he's coming over to see Leah. I understand having to talk about your relationship, especially if you leave things kind of on a rocky note. And obviously, she's not staying in this hotel forever, so she will have to be set up in stability at some point. But I feel like he comes at it in such a threatening way. For a person like Amber, you're never going to reach her like that. He needs to be approaching it from a loving space. I know Amber is obviously a terrible person, but I'm taking the past out of it and just looking at this singular moment in time where Gary is pressuring her to come home and using money as a weapon. We have Amber repeating herself by saying, "You know, if I came back, Gary, nothing would change." And honestly, Gary could probably say the exact same thing for her. We have this toxic cycle that is addicted to each other in one way or another, so each of them has to continue where the other one left off. Amber leaves, Gary has to run after her. Gary leaves, Amber has to run after him. We once again have a great example of how these two are just not good together. Amber's shown getting ready for bed as her voiceover ends the scene by saying, "Gary wants us to move back in together, but with the way things are going, I don't know if we can ever make this work." The next time we see Amber, she is just hanging out in her crappy motel room, and her friend comes by to visit her. The scene actually kind of starts a little dreary, but ends up going into one of my favorite fucking things about Teen Mom. First, Amber and her friend are sitting there with baby Leah on the bed, just talking about Amber's options. Would she go back to Gary's house? Amber says only if Gary moves out and moves to his mom's place so she could have the whole apartment to herself, which I think Gary is still paying for. And also, I don't think it was Gary's plan to ask you to move back in so he could move out. And then her friend asks her, "Well, what if that doesn't happen? What are you going to do then?" Amber says, "Well, I guess I'll get another hotel for a little bit." Her friend continues, "What about after that?" And that's when Amber says, "Well, you know what? I really don't know what I'm going to do." That rather depressing scene transitions into what I referenced earlier, one of my favorite things about Teen Mom, something I haphazardly dubbed the Gare Bear Overshare. Here we get to see Gary going into, this time it's a candle store, and telling the associate way more than this poor woman would ever want to know about why this rotund man is in her little candle shop trying to buy a candle.
Hi.
Hello.
I just want to buy a candle, I think.
Okay. I have several scents. They're in jars.
And if maybe you could tell me what kind of occasion, what you're looking for.
Me and my fiancé broke up.
Oh.
Oh my god. You can tell she was not expecting him to say that. I wonder, is like MTV telling him to have this conversation? Or is this organic? Me and my fiance broke up. Oh.
No.
This is how your day at work's going, lady. She was gonna say, like, "Oh, is it for your mom? Or, you know, for your girlfriend? You know, is it her birthday?" No, no, no. This is, "I need to repair my entire life." That kind of candle.
So, I personally want to work things out. And,
Oh, we're still going.
I'm gonna surprise her with a dinner tonight, you know.
That sounds really nice.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think we're gonna bring Cracker Barrel.
Cracker Barrel.
She likes like the meatloaf out there and the yellow, it's pretty good. So I'm gonna take it and probably put it on my own little plates.
Are you gonna tell her you cooked?
No, I'll let her know that I got it from Cracker Barrel, but yeah, I've been trying. And you know, with this, I don't know. We'll see. It's a gesture, I guess, you know.
A total gesture, because I'm sure Gary has no fucking idea if a candle and some Cracker Barrel is going to win Amber's heart. Before the scene ends, it transitions back to Amber, her friend, and baby Leah in the motel room, still having their conversation on the bed. Her friend asks her, "What's the biggest difference living here versus living with Gary? How are you feeling?" Amber says, "I'm so much more at ease here, but I worry about Leah." She actually says, "Sometimes I think about what Leah's life would be like without Gary in it." Somehow convincing herself in this moment that she could ever possibly take care of Leah on her own without Gary's support and care. This is her last day in the hotel, she says. I forgot to mention that, sorry. It doesn't really matter, because regardless, she doesn't know where she's staying. That's a question mark. She's checking out the next morning at 11 a.m. And yet she's sitting here trying to pretend that, oh, what would Leah's life be like if Gary wasn't in it? Girl, you cannot survive without Gary.
You know what, guys? I think this is a perfect time for a Christina fact.
It's a Christina fact.
Christina has one nose.
It's a Christina fact.
In Amber's next scene, it's time for Gary to deliver on his Cracker Barrel promise. He walks into her motel room and says, hey, can you go to the bathroom for a while until I tell you to come out? Okay. But she heads on into the bathroom and lets Gary set up his little date. It's honestly quite cute. He sets the whole table, puts it on plates, the meatloaf, the mashed potatoes. He even got drinks from Cracker Barrel, and I didn't even know Cracker Barrel did like branded to-go drinks. I thought that was really cool. Anyway, he finally has everything set up. He has the candle in the middle of this table, all lit. He finally lets Amber come out of the bathroom. She sees everything on the table and excitedly exclaims,
meatloaf!
Ah, finally, Amber, something we can agree on. The two of them sit down, place baby Leah in her little playpen right near the table, and they start to enjoy their meatloaf. It seems like they're having a really good time. In fact, Gary takes a note from the associate from the candle store.
I made this.
You made all this?
Yeah.
Why does it say Cracker Barrel?
Overlooked a crucial detail there, Gary. But it was a cute joke, and he says right after that, oh, well, you know, I brought it here and I put it on plates. Okay, I'll give it to you. That's so funny. Amber gets down to business after that and says, so why are you doing all this, Gary? And essentially just says, Amber, I want you in my life and I want you to come home. We don't need to be doing this anymore. Amber replies once again in an exasperated manner. This relationship has been drained, which I'm not sure if she means this relationship has been draining or all the emotion has been drained out of the relationship. I feel like I might be giving her a little too much credit by saying that. Nonetheless, Gary says, I want you in my life and I want this to work. I want my family to work. We see a man that knows he has a baby and therefore knows he has a family to take care of, and he's doing his best to take responsibility for them. He can't be having his baby mama sitting up in a motel with their child and not be doing anything about it. Gary even goes so far as to say, look, I want you and Leah home so badly that you can come home and I'll go to my mom's house. I can't believe he's offering this. Oh my God. Amber says that she's glad that he said that. Oh, I'm sure you are. I would be too. And she accepts the offer. Right away, she says, I have no idea how I'm going to be out tomorrow by 11. Gary says, well, I'll try to work something out. I'll try to have somebody here for you to help you move. Okay, great. It's settled. The scene continues to Amber letting Gary know, like, look, I'll come home. I'll take advantage of your hospitality, my friend. But this is a long relationship we've been in, and rejoining that is something I really, really, really need to think about. And okay, I'm coming down hard on her because she's just so excited to get back to that house without Gary in it. But it is good that she's being clear with him. Look, I'll come back home. That doesn't mean we're back together. Gary actually completely understands. He says, I'm not asking you to come running back to me. I'm here to let you know that I'm working to get my family back together. Amber, still a bit exasperated, says, we've done this how many times now, Gary? Is it really all worth it? Gary gestures.
It's a gesture, I guess.
To Leah and says, I think it is. And yes, but it goes back to the thing that Macy said. What's best for Bentley is if his parents are happy. What's best for Leah is if her parents are happy. Will this make Amber happy? I don't know. But I do know going back to Gary's house with Leah will keep Leah safe.
And that is best for Leah. So I'm happy they could come to this compromise so Leah can be safe. That is, after all, my top priority personally. As their dinner winds down, Amber thanks Gary for everything he's done tonight. She lets him know that she really appreciates it and thinks that everything was really nice. And I like seeing that appreciation. Kudos to both of you right now. She even asks if she could keep the candle, and Gary tells her that yes, she can. And I'm glad, because I think that would have been really shitty to be like, no, it's my candle. You don't know what I had to go through to get this candle. Gary gathers up the leftovers, says goodbye to Leah, and walks out the door. Between when he's gathering everything off the table and when he's saying goodbye to Leah, Amber already is laying down on the bed about to fall asleep. I'm not sure I saw her standing up this entire episode. I really never knew. I never paid attention to how often she is laying or sitting or lounging or relaxing. Because I'm the same way. I'm always trying to sit down or lounge. It never crossed my mind that that was strange. But I'm not sure she's been standing or walking this entire episode. Before the scene ends, we see Gary in his car calling his boss, asking for the next day off so he can help Amber move home. Now that's commitment. In Amber's next scene, we see Gary following through on his promise, taking the day off to help Amber move out of the motel. It seems like a pretty quick process, so I'm glad for that. And when Amber gets into the apartment, it still looks pretty messy, but Gary has completely stocked the fridge for her and Leah. It's really good to see that he kind of went the extra mile, even if somebody told him to go the extra mile. I'm happy to see that it was done. After Amber and Leah get situated in the apartment, Gary tells her that really, ultimately, he just wants to make sure that she and Leah are safe. Gary gives Amber a hug. Amber really thanks him for helping her out, and Gary heads out. Amber says to Leah, "We're home. For now." Pulls Leah close, gives her a big hug, and that ends her scene. And finally, we catch up with Farah. We open with Farah getting ready to go out. We see Deb holding Sophia and Farah saying goodbye to Sophia, who I think kind of turns away the first time she goes to kiss her goodbye, because Deb makes the passive-aggressive comment that, oh, Sophia's mad at you, like mad at Farah for leaving. I get what she's saying. Farah shouldn't be going out. We all know that. But that comment was definitely passive-aggressive. MTV crews follow Farah out to her local bar, the Candlelight Lounge, which to me sounds like a strip club, but I guess it's not. Farah's voiceover says as she's pulling into the bar that being a mom while going to school and working makes it really hard to have a social life. But she's determined to make it work. Oh yes, Farah, that's very clear. You are very determined to make it work. We see Farah inside, talking, laughing, joking with her friends, enjoying some kind of beverage. She is still underage, I believe, at this time, so it shouldn't be alcoholic, but I know small town bars, and that doesn't always matter. We see Farah ask her friend to help find her a hot guy tonight. Tall, dark, and handsome, really cute guy. That's what she wants out of tonight? That's what you're leaving Sophia for again, Farah? Oh my fucking god. We do eventually see that friend introducing Farah to a guy friend of hers named Dylan. And I guess this girl goes to art class with Dylan, and he and Farah immediately start flirting and blah, 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 blah. He's not really that cute. Like, maybe by 2010 standards he is, but not to me personally. I'm not the greatest judge of that, though. The scene ends with Farah just drinking, dancing, carrying on, and her voiceover saying that she's glad she got a night out and got to meet some hot guys, too. Douchebag. So mark this down, everyone. We are officially at the point where I can no longer be sympathetic for Farah. What is it? Episode 5 of Season 1. Okay, mark that down. I'll give you a second. We enter in on Farah's next scene, where she is what else but getting ready to go out. A fucking gen. Ferris says she and a friend are supposed to go out to dinner and hang out, but there's a guy who texted her and he wants to meet up at 11:30 p.m. So you're leaving Sophia home this whole time. MTV does not give us a timestamp, but looking at the sky outside of her house in what the scene is set up to look like, it looks like it's about twilight. Safe bet anywhere between 6:30 and 8:30 p.m. That's 2 hours time span where she's just getting ready and hanging out with one of her friends in her room. They're planning to go out to dinner. That's fine. The problem happens when you are planning to have another rendezvous at 11:30 p.m. Those usually go a couple hours. You're not getting out of there until at least 1:30, at least 1:30 a.m. You're shirking so much responsibility at this point. It's excessive. The real drama comes when she hands baby Sophia off to Deb.
Do you want me to just take her downstairs?
Well, in a minute, but I want to find out what's going on here first.
Okay, me and Ali are meeting up with my friend Lindsay. Like later on, I'm going to be home.
Well, how much later on is...
I don't know, like late. We're going to just plan for like two.
I'm going to ask you something. Just...
No, I'm not asking you anything.
Well, good. You can just listen.
No, nobody cares to hear your mouth. Well,
who talks to their father figure like that in front of her friends? I will never pretend like I was nice to my parents as a teenager, but I would never talk to them like that in front of somebody. Her friend's still standing right there next to her during this handoff. I have to ask myself, what would I do as the friend standing there? I feel like I would pull out my phone or turn the other way, or even better, I would just be like, yo, I'm gonna wait out in the car. Just text me if you need me. That's probably more like me. Text me if you need me. I'm going to be out in the car because I don't want to be even around that. I don't want to get involved. What if they say something to me like, do you think it's okay that she's doing this? I don't want to start that conversation. No, thank you.
I'm asking you to quit staying out late.
Oh, okay, Michael.
Okay.
Give me baby. Let go. I don't want you out until 2 o'clock. I think midnight's good enough.
Oh, okay.
Midnight sounds fucking generous to me. They're trying to compromise with her. They're trying to meet her still way, way on her end. But they're trying. They're trying to work with her. Her mom says midnight, that's generous.
Your life has changed.
Yeah, I know, Mom.
And you have responsibility.
Yeah, I do.
You are a mother. You belong home.
Oh, okay. Well, I know other people don't have a problem with it.
Listen to what
I'm trying to tell you.
Okay, I'm sick of this. So have a good night. I'll be back and don't worry.
Listen,
I'm going to leave now so that she can get sleep.
Like talking to a woman.
I'm very disappointed.
Yeah, I'm very disappointed in you and Michael.
I wish my parents would stop telling me to be a better mom and let me be a normal teenager.
I have to ask a question here too because maybe I have to ask two questions. The first question, which I think I've asked before, is Farrah this delusional? Or, second question, is something going on behind the scenes that hasn't been captured on camera and is making Farrah react this way? Don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to give her an excuse, but specifically saying I'm disappointed in you and Michael, I think that's a strange phrase to say at that moment. There's just so much underlying when you live with people like Deb. We may be only picking up just a small snippet of their daily interaction. There may be whisperings behind the scenes of Deb saying, yeah, no problem, Farrah will totally watch the baby, only to be giving a hard time now in front of her friends in order to make a point. Complete hypothesis based on personal experience, but that's something we can't rule out here. Just because I'm very disappointed in you and Michael was said. And I think it goes without saying that Farrah's voiceover at the end, I wish they would just let me be a teenager, is so fucking bogus. I really, really hope that she was just forced into saying that contractually, because that's just a level of delusion that I don't want to face for Farrah. Next time we see Farrah, she and her friend are driving in the car on their way to pick up their third friend, and Farrah's complaining about everything that just happened, really making herself out to look like a complete douchebag. It's almost a little remarkable. I wasn't sure she could do it, but she's really just saying in the car to her friend, like, my dad is so stupid. He's so annoying. They don't know what they're talking about. I don't need a curfew. And it's like, you're completely missing the point, Farah, 100%. Her friend even says to her, yeah, it shouldn't even matter if, you know, you're home when they say to be home. And Farah says, well, I don't need a curfew. I don't have to be home whenever they say. I feel like her friend was trying to maybe take the middle ground there. Clearly, Farah is not taking any middle ground. After Farah shares those enlightening thoughts, the scene jumps ahead to a little bit later on in the evening where they've picked up their third friend. And while I thought they were going out to dinner or something, whatever they told Deb, it looks like they're actually heading into an apartment building. Farah's voiceover tells us that she is going to meet up with Alexander and two of his friends at Alexander's apartment, and she hopes he's as cool as he seemed at the bar.
Douchebag.
Unfortunately, the rendezvous turns sour almost immediately upon starting. Farah walks in and her friends all sit down and they're talking and chatting. Alexander seems very pointy. You know, he seems like a nice guy, but I just feel like if he bumped into me, it would prick me. You know what I mean? That kind of pointy person. He seems nice enough, but as soon as the conversation moves past, well, how are you doing? How's the weather? Alexander starts telling his friends and saying to the group, you know, with the way she, Farah, with the way she acts, you wouldn't think that she has a baby at home. Ooh, shots fired.
The things that she does, like you would never imagine that she will have a baby, you know?
Well, what do you think a girl with a baby should be doing?
It depends.
Like, sit at home and knit?
It's like, how can we do it? Who's gonna, like, watch the baby for you?
She is with my parents.
So what time do you have to be home?
Whenever I want to be home.
But your parents are babysitting for
but
you.
But yeah.
So don't you worry about Sophia?
You act like I'm irresponsible.
But you just said you don't care what time you're going to be home.
I don't care. I just know when I'm going to be home. I do what I want to do.
All right.
Ooh. God, I gotta say, Farah is perpetrator of some of the most cringe stuff on Teen Mom. She definitely gets that award 100%. So I feel like what happens here is a little complex because everything he's saying is absolutely true. Stuff I've been saying this entire episode. Like, well, how can you leave a kid at home like that? Aren't you, like, worried about her? Don't you miss her? Totally. I agree with him 100%. I'm wondering, when did he find out she had a kid? Was it at the bar? Because if he found out at the bar, is it possible he went home and Googled her and now changed his opinion on her? Because I find it very strange that he would invite her and her friends to his apartment only to interrogate her. Really? I mean, maybe for TV time, that could be it too, because it's already been a draw for some of her other relationships, in my opinion. Her friends aren't exactly coming to her aid. I'm sure they agree that, yeah, she should be home, but how are you gonna let her be attacked by this dude? I don't think that's fair either. Farah follows up that awkward conversation by asking Alexander if he still wanted to hang out the next day. I guess they had talked previously and he let her know that he was free. And, oh, suddenly, he's got to take his friend to the airport. She snarkily says, oh, well, then I guess we won't hang out. You know what, Farah? I think you're fine without hanging out with this guy. She only asked that to be a bitch, just to see what he would say, which I guess in that case is a little fair because he's been putting her on the spot almost since she walked through the door. So for her to go ahead and turn it around on him in that way, yeah, it makes her look shitty too, but it's not undeserved. All around, this was a bad outing. Farah and her friends get up to leave. When Farah gets out into the hallway with her friends, she asks them, oh, so what did you guys think? And right away, they're like, no, we got bad vibes. In my opinion, from what we did see, Farah was put in a shitty situation too. It would be great if she could have just stayed home and avoided this altogether. In Farah's next scene, her voiceover admits that spending time with that Alexander guy the night before was a waste of her time. In this scene, Farah, her mom, Michael, and baby Sophia are all getting ready for dinner, and her mom asks her, so, what happened last night, Farah? You said you were going to be home at 2 and you come waltzing in here at 3? And, of course, this immediately starts an argument. Again, I think there's heavy editing going on, at least in the beginning stages of this argument, but Fair is shown to pretty much be blowing off her mother, actually telling her, okay, get over it. Kind of like, who fucking cares if I was out until 3? You're watching Sophia. Deb tries to tell Farah, look, we need to know where you are and when you're coming home. And honestly, if not just for the fact that they're her parents and she is still a teenager, they are babysitting Sophia. I think it's only fair to let them know when you're going to be home and to stick to that. Now we're at a point here where we see Farah completely abusing her parents as free babysitting. Before, she was just taking advantage. Now she's completely abusing the situation. Farah's mom asks Farah, what's the plan for tonight then? And Farah tells her, oh, I'm going out with my friends. Again. What is going on? Can she not bring her friends over to the house? It's a beautiful house. There's enough room in the house to be far enough away from her parents to where they won't bother her. Is there a reason she has to keep going out? And she tells her parents here that it's to go out with her girlfriends, but we saw her tell them the same thing the night before, and she ended up meeting up with 3 guys. So, what is the truth here, Farah? Even us as viewers, we're not quite sure, because all we get to see in this moment are these 3, 4 if you count Sophia, who Michael is holding in his arms, fighting instead of actually communicating.
So what's going to go on tonight?
I'm just hanging out with Danielle and some of the girls tonight for a little bit.
What does that mean?
I'm hanging out with them because I don't get to see them.
What does that mean exactly? Is that an hour? Is that 2 hours?
I don't know, Mom. I don't put a time limit on everything I do.
So I want to know what the bottom line is here.
What bottom line, Mom? That I'm going out tonight? That's the bottom line.
No, how you're going to change and be responsible and be a mother.
I am a mom. I am a teenager, too. I don't need to be stuck in the house. If you don't want to have Sophia, somebody else will while I go out.
Oh, isn't that good? Who are we going to pick?
I don't know. You don't need to worry about it.
We all worry about it. Michael worries about it. We all worry about it.
So, obviously, Farah here is being completely unreasonable and extremely entitled. We see here Deb asking some very understandable and normal questions, and Farah reacting in a very abrasive manner. But here's my hypothesis on this. Farah, once she had Sophia, in her mind became an adult. Unfortunately, instead of taking responsibility for her child in an adult manner, she took it to the other extreme where she would rather just be doing whatever the fuck she wants, whenever the fuck she wants, because her entire life, she's had these parental figures, or at least one parental figure, who has been completely overbearing. And now, because of Farah's understanding of who her mother is, she only knows how to communicate with her in one way. And that's through aggression when she's asking too many questions. I feel like maybe if they had a different relationship before this moment, Farah might still be the entitled bitch that she's being, but Deb might be getting better responses from her about when she'll be home, who she'll be with, and honestly who she's trying to go out and meet. At this point in the argument, Michael jumps in again with baby Sophia on his hip and says, Farah, when you're a single parent, you don't go out, you take responsibility. And Farah essentially argues like, no, single parents go out, and I'm sure they do, but a lot of them also like fucking don't. So the argument continues, and we see Michael trying to work with her for the second time in this episode. He says, can you at least make it one night, not every night? That's way more than fair. Oh my gosh, you have a built-in night to yourself as a new single parent every week. But no matter how reasonable Farah's parents are being here, they're just not getting through to her. She's not wanting to hear it. Her voiceover ends that scene by saying she's been working so hard to have a social life, but maybe it's not even worth it anymore. The scene cuts to commercial, but comes back on Farah in a much calmer state. She's, you guessed it, getting ready to go out, and Deb comes into her room and asks if they can talk. Her demeanor, extremely different, much softer, and much less confrontational than I've personally ever seen it on the show so far. Deb starts off the conversation by saying she loves Farrah very much, and she feels sad that Farrah finds this need to leave the house every night. Farrah responds that Deb acts like she doesn't care about Sophia and that Sophia is not her top priority because she, quote-unquote, goes out on the weekends. Right, the weekends. Deb very calmly responds to Farrah. What she's trying to get Farrah to understand is that it puts a large burden on everyone else around her when Farrah essentially decides to take off. Deb says it much nicer than I am right now. So honestly, kudos to Deb for figuring out that she needs to bring it down and soften it up in order to be heard. Deb tells Farrah in a very supportive way, I know you love Sophia. We all know you love Sophia. What Deb also knows, she says, is that Farrah is still young and there are still things that Farrah doesn't understand, and Deb is really just trying to help Farrah learn those things. She ends the conversation by saying, I hope you think about this, and I hope you choose to act responsibly, and I love you. Farrah says, I love you too, and they have this awkward hug on Farrah's bed. But honestly, I think this is a really good conversation. I'm hopeful that this will get through to her, and since I don't remember a lot of what happens in the series after this, maybe she will. After Caitlin's final scene, the montage starts with Amber and Leah sitting on the little ledge by the window in their old apartment, and Gary sitting in a cluttered room on his bed with no sheet on it. Next, we see Macy, Ryan, and Mimi Jen in Ryan's parents' house, and Ryan is playing with baby Bentley while Macy's cuddled up with a blanket on the couch, watching and smiling on. We see a replay of Farrah awkwardly hugging her mom on her bed from when they were having their heart-to-heart, and then it shows baby Sophia sleeping in her crib. After that, it rounds back to Caitlin and Tyler, Caitlin holding on to Tyler, hugging him, and while their scene ended with her smiling, now I see some worries behind her eyes. I'm just hoping she's really okay, as she's saying that she is. Whew, another packed session, but thank you guys so much for packing your bowls and sticking in there with me. I had a great time, as always, deep diving into some Teen Mom with you guys. And please be sure to join us for our next session, where we're talking about the 6th episode of Teen Mom OG, Standing Up. Uh-oh. I hope Amber's able to be in this episode. In the meantime, you can check us out on Instagram at @attodpodcast on Instagram. Same handle on Twitter at @attodpodcast on Instagram and Twitter. That is the acronym for the show about this time of day. On there, you'll just see some cool things like when the next session is coming up and, of course, a preview into every session's companion. So I hope you guys want to check it out. Also, you can go old school and email at attodpodcast@gmail.com. That's where you would send your Christina facts. Of course, only positive Christina facts will be read, so please keep that in mind. As the title of this episode suggests, we saw all the girls looking for a little extra help today. And I gotta give kudos to the dads on this one. I feel like everybody really went way out of their way to provide. I mean, look at Tyler suggesting that Caitlin reach out to Dawn. Thanks to him, she was able to go on that retreat. Gary bringing Cracker Barrel, helping her move the next day. Incredible. And then, of course, Ryan. Well, I guess 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Meatloaf! Strung out on weed. Don't leave.